Who's apologising first, then, you or I?
I think we both need to apologise as much as each other. Hi.
It's been a while. We are back. It's also, not only have we been away for a very long time, and we are very, very sorry for that, but it's also not a Friday.
It is Feet Up Tuesday.
We are starting this show with a flat-out lie.
Yeah.
But it does feel like a Friday, in our defence.
Well, it's Christmas Eve, and I worked a half day, so it felt like, you know, half term. Yay! Yeah. End of school, time for the holidays. It's definitely that kind of Friday feeling.
And we do have to catch up. There's an awful lot to catch up with in terms of Formula One. There's much to discuss, and it seems like today feels like a great day to be doing that. So we've got our drinks. We've got our we've got our setup. We're ready to go. We've made our apologies. Let's talk F1.
One of the reasons, I mean, there were many reasons we haven't done a show recently, but one of them was that, well, the end of 2013 wasn't the best. It was a dull end to a season, I'd say, not a classic.
I think the last show that we recorded for Side Podcast, we said that Red Bull were set to dominate, and this was back in July. It was expected that when the tyres were strengthened to Adrian Newey's liking, that his design would run away with a championship. I didn't honestly expect 9 straight wins on the bounce.
It's a lot of wins.
I never, you know, even in my wildest of nightmares, would have put that, you know, would have gone for that. But I did expect that Vettel would take the title with ease.
And he did.
And he did, and that happened. And in fairness, there wasn't an awful lot to say about that. I mean, we could have done shows and been quite negative about the whole thing, but what can you say? The guy drove exceptionally well. I don't recall, actually, Sebastian Vettel making a mistake. In 2013, did he put a foot wrong?
I wiped it from my memory already.
Right.
To be honest.
We should say congratulations to the guy, because he drove peerlessly. He had the best car on the grid by miles, absolutely miles. But he didn't squander it like, say, Mark Webber did.
Cheeky. Yeah, but 2013 wasn't the best. 2014 is shaping up to be much better. Although, we've got a lot of driver movements for this year. And I'm always saying, I want more driver movements. We haven't had massive changes.
You love silly season.
I do love silly season. But having said that, I am not happy about a lot of the 2014 pairings.
Do tell.
They're all just wrong.
What do you mean?
Well, there are so many, I thought we could like run through the teams.
Okay.
And then you... new driver lineups and see what we think.
What we think or what you think?
What I think.
I can't say that I'm bothered by anybody, but I'm intrigued what is vexing you.
Well, they don't all vex me. But starting at the top with Red Bull, obviously. Vettel is in still. I mean, you wouldn't want to get rid of him, would you?
Never, no.
And Ricciardo gets his chance. It's sad to see Webber go, but I must say, I think it was definitely by the end, it was the right time. He went rogue.
In what way?
Well, helmets off, taking lifts in dangerous positions.
Ah.
It's all
yeah,
wrong.
For a man who was so pro-safety, it was somewhat hypocritical that once he felt his Formula One career was over, he just thought, stuff everybody else.
I think even he thought perhaps afterwards that the helmet thing was a mistake, because he was like, this is a lot louder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Also stones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Red Bull are also facing some pretty significant changes, because they've lost, is it 3 people now? Or they've got lots of changes in the engineering department. Mm-hmm. 2 people have gone to Mercedes.
Exodus.
Well, if you can count 3 people.
It's not a mass exodus, but it's an exodus.
And then one of the people is from their vehicle dynamics team, and the guy taking over that role has come from Sauber. He joined earlier in the year. Now, Sauber, not really known for doing so well at the moment.
Given their budget... in 2013, they did reasonably... they out-developed the car, given the budget they had. But, yeah, not known for their remarkable aerodynamic or vehicle performance efficiency. So, Red Bull, they're losing more than they're bringing in, by the sound of it.
I'm intrigued to find out whether these people are leaving Red Bull because they think they've hit the high and it's only downhill from here, especially with the new regulations thing. Or, if Red Bull do go downhill, it's because these people have left, you know, is it chicken and egg thing? It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Major regulation changes offer other teams a huge opportunity to make up lost ground. And every team needs to make up lost ground on Red Bull. What I think is key for us as fans is that whatever secrets are driving that Red Bull car to give it the performance edge that Adrian Newey and his team have found, having that proliferate around the paddock is can only be a good thing. You've got guys going to McLaren, that's going to be important. Guys going to other teams, what you know, they're going to take that knowledge with them, and those departments will have an advantage. They will know some of Red Bull secrets. Now the question obviously is in 2014 whether those secrets are going to be of any use whatsoever.
Is it too soon?
Well, it may be that there's obviously changes to things like the exhaust blown diffuser and things like that are just completely out of the window in 2014. There's no advantage to be found in that area. And if that happened to be where most of the Red Bull performance was coming from, then, you know, it doesn't matter if everybody knows how they used to be fast. The question is, how are they going to be fast in the future? However, if I think there was rumours that the under tray at the front of the car was actually enhancing the performance too, what they were doing with the T-tray. And if things like that remain roughly the same next year, and therefore that knowledge could be useful to others. So as fans, I'm excited to see people leaving Red Bull with knowledge, you know, with information in their heads, which can be shared amongst other teams. I think that can only be a good thing for us and may spell the end of a period of domination.
Well, they both went to Mercedes, who are keeping the consistent driver lineup, one of the only teams to do that, I think. But they did a lot better this in 2013 than people thought they were. I did a review recently of the season prediction Megamix, and most people are like, yeah, Mercedes might do well, they might get a win here or there, but no one predicted they'd be right near the top, fighting like they did.
Mercedes had an exceptional season, and they have one of the strongest driver lineups. They had one of the strongest driver lineups this year, and we'll take that into next year.
Ferrari have Alonso and the return of Kimi Raikkonen, which many people are excited about. I went off Raikkonen a lot last year, this year, whatever year it is, 2013. I went off him, just, you know, didn't like the way the whole Lotus thing was handled. I mean, it was much their fault as it was his, but didn't go very well, did it?
I am glad that Fernando Alonso has had his life stirred up. You know, he's got a bit of it's not all plain sailing for Fernando Alonso. He's not dictating exactly how the team is being run. He would have liked Felipe Massa to stay. He's obviously going to make the most of Kimi Raikkonen coming in. I suspect Kimi is the one driver on the grid that Alonso cannot get under the skin of. Kimi is not going to pay any attention to Alonso's mind games, and that's obviously a risk for Fernando, and I suspect he's not so much looking forward to that this coming season.
It's a bit of a risk for Ferrari as well, really, as a whole.
Well, they've got to do something, because, I mean, how many times has Fernando Alonso finished now second in the championship?
Yeah, second or third.
This year it was by a wider margin than I think ever before, but they cannot continue to becoming, you know, the also runs in every championship. They've got to do something, and this seems like a sensible thing to do.
I was happy that Grosjean kept his seat at Lotus, obviously, but then they confirmed that Maldonado was going to join him there.
On the one hand, not a huge fan of Maldonado and his driving. On the other, Enzo need that money. They really very much need, having not paid, at least not paid Kimi last year. I don't know if they paid Grosjean. But they certainly failed to pay one of their drivers. And even at this point in time, I don't think Kimi's been paid everything that he's owed. They need cash. And Maldonado has that in buckets. Literally, he just carries buckets of cash around. And that's what Enzo needs.
But it's not fair that Grosjean is in the team and Maldonado's just come in and Maldonado is the race winner. And Grosjean hasn't done that yet. It's not fair.
Rage. So that's another pairing you're not a fan of, then.
Well, that's the worst one. That made me properly miserable when I heard that. I sulked.
Without Maldonado,
with a little pouty lip and
without that guy, Grosjean won't have a fast car.
Yeah, there is that.
It's debatable whether he's even going to have a fast car as it is, given the engineering talent the team have lost. Couple that with a lack of financial resources, they could well be, you know, middle of the grid, back of the field.
That would be less good. Yeah, because there was also that big rumour that Eric Boullier was going to leave, which turned out to be nonsense.
Thus far, turned out to be nonsense. Yes.
But for a minute, because the Grosjean staying was the one thing I was happy about the 2014 grid. But then he partnered with Maldonado and no Eric Boullier. That would just be awful.
Eric and Romain seem to make... I mean, the guy makes sense being in charge of Enstone. I cannot foresee a reason in his mind why he would want to leave, unless he's not being paid either. In which case, you know, maybe going a full senior isn't a bad
thing. But then the Lotus tweeters put up a picture of his parking space and there was a car in it. So we're confident he's still there at the moment. McLaren have Button and Magnussen. There was the whole Perez leaving fallout. I don't think they treated him very well, did they?
Perez?
Yeah.
Martin Whitmarsh came across as a man racked with guilt.
He's phoning up other people, please take our driver. And Perez said that he'd sent his contract in and thought it was all fine.
Mm.
And then they were like, nah, we don't want to take you up on that.
Yeah, McLaren are all over the show. This year they made a dreadful car. They've got the team is in a bit of turmoil. You would say, looking, you know, from the outside looking in, they've got to make a huge step forward. They've got to make the absolute most of these regulations. They're taking a risk with Magnussen, unproven. Obviously, they've done that before with Lewis Hamilton. But at the time when Lewis came into Formula One, there was an awful lot more testing. And we saw this year how long it took Gutierrez to get up to speed. Magnussen is supposed to be mega in the simulator. And McLaren are a team who rely on simulators more than any other team, I guess. Certainly, you know, they put a lot of stock into the quality of their race simulator. And if Magnussen is faster in it, then they assume he's going to be faster in the car. Time will tell whether it's the right decision. Perez did not set the world on fire at McLaren.
Yeah, I mean, we've always said that McLaren if they have a poor start to a season, they're really quick and good at turning their car around and getting up to speed. And they didn't really do that this year. So whether that was because of Perez or if they just need someone who can feed back a bit better, I don't know. Don't really know much about Magnussen, so that will be interesting.
So you're not upset about the McLaren lineup. You're just not, it's just an unknown to you.
Yeah, well, I'm only upset about it because then Perez moves to Force India with Hülkenberg, who shouldn't be at Force India. He's gone back again. He's taken a big step backwards.
Same as Kimi. Well, he's going around circles like Kimi, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, everyone was expecting Hülkenberg to get a better drive than that.
He deserves a better drive than the Force India. But he doesn't come with enough sponsorship to buy himself a seat. So, therefore, he has to get there on talent and talent alone. And right now, Formula One is struggling. He's struggling with, you know, in the financial, you know, in all areas, financial. Formula One is in trouble.
Of all the teams that you would think didn't need money, Force India wouldn't be it, though. If they can afford to hire on talent alone, how's that happened?
That's true. That's a fair point.
I mean, Perez...
We live in a world where Lotus need money and Force India have loads.
Perez can't be bringing that much to cover another seat.
Brings somebody's money. I forget who it is.
Talmex?
Yes. Is it Talmex?
I don't know. He's is that Gutierrez?
I forget. There is money coming. Perez has some money. It's less than... it's more than Suter, but less than Maldonado. That's how it works. This is how we're staggering the grid. Higher than Ace. Yes, Maldonado brings the most money. Perez also brings some, but he brings more than Sutil. So Sutil ends up at Sauber and Perez at Force India.
Yeah, Sutil
seems like an odd match, though.
I'm not happy about Sutil at Sauber because I'm not Sutil's biggest fan and I am Manisha's biggest fan. But I like that they've kept Gutierrez. I think that's good because she spent a lot of last year saying he's a rookie learning in public. Mm-hmm. We need to give him a chance and, you know, we have faith in him. So it's good that they have stuck by that word.
Yes. They have a bit of money. Sauber have... Obviously, whatever Sutil's bringing, they've got whatever Gutierrez is able to bring. And they've got the Russian Sorokin in the third driver role.
Yeah.
So they've got presumably some money from Russia as well. It's quite an international team, considering they're based in Switzerland. You've got it. You know, they are spanning the globe in terms of income. But it sounds like they should have a sensible budget for next year and maybe be able to develop their car more than they could in 2013.
Toro Rosso have Vern and Kvyat, which we knew ages ago. Williams have Bottas, which is good. I like that one. I like Bottas. And they have Massa, which I am torn about because A, I like Massa. Everyone likes Massa. But B, it's sort of time to move on.
Williams is the team to go to when it's time to move on.
Yeah.
It happened with Barrichello, right?
Yeah.
In comes Barrichello. He drives for Williams. He messed up a lot of times and he got in a lot of people's way. And then it was, you know, he was on his... He was out on his ear and that was the end of his Formula One career. You could see the same thing happen to Massa. Williams, though, I have a lot of faith in because they are a team who feels like they've been lost, but it looks like they are now found. They've got Pat Simmons in charge. They're bringing in engineering talent, I think, from Red Bull. They have apparently enough money that they no longer need Maldonado's money, which is good. I mean, Massa must be bringing some. Clearly not as much as Pastor. So they're obviously in a reasonably sound financial position, or at least are throwing caution to the wind.
Yeah.
They've gone for a decent lineup. We know Bossas is good. We know Massa is good. Engineering-wise, solid. I have great expectations for Williams in 2014. I'm very, very hopeful that they can turn it around.
And you like Claire as well.
I'd like Claire. So, what's your point?
Just the icing on the cake, that's all. And Marussia and Caterham, between them, have only announced Bianchi, who is staying at Marussia. All the other seats remain to be confirmed.
So, at least they haven't annoyed you. Caterham are the only team on the grid who haven't annoyed you with their driver lineup yet.
That's true. I mean, there's big rumours about Guido, retaining his seat, I think, which would be good.
He married into money very recently.
He did get married, yes.
Into money.
Okay.
Very recently. So he might be one to stick around. We'll see how it goes. Do you have any predictions? Do you have any favourites? Who would you like to see?
There's so many names.
Do you want to see a return of Chilton?
No.
Not in the slightest. No. Would that upset you?
It wouldn't upset me, I don't think. But he didn't really do anything to warrant a return. But then he has the money, so that's what it's all about these days.
The one problem.
Higher, lower.
Yes, he does. He has some cash. Although there were rumours that it might be running out soon. We'll see what happens on that front. My one issue I do have with Max Chilton is he's so goddamn normal.
Yeah.
That man is just so unabashedly British. He's just... it's like the guy down the road. He may as well be our neighbour.
He tweets about going for walks and getting stuck in queues and traffic jams, and I was watching the X Factor.
He watches X Factor and tweets Mazda. I mean, come on. Where's the rock star? We want to look up to our Formula One drivers.
So far, we have 19 drivers then, and we also have a 19 race calendar. See, I did that. Connected the numbers. It was confirmed that it wasn't going to be 22, which we were all quite relieved about, I think. The new races in Mexico and New Jersey aren't happening, but the new / old race in Austria is, and the brand new one in Russia as well, which I'm always excited about, new races, although so far they haven't really proven to be brilliant.
The Austin Grand Prix lived up to expectations.
Yes, that one did. That's true. I forgot that
previous
one.
Races, though.
Feels like they've been going there forever. It's so good.
It's slotted nicely into the calendar. It's a perfect addition to the Formula One calendar. Valencia, obviously, was a race we were excited about. That let us down.
Korea has dropped off the calendar.
Goodness me, Korea. Excited.
India has been postponed.
Yeah, you're right. Fair enough. There are more duds than there are successes. We shall see what happens with Russia. So you are excited to see that one. Are you excited by Austria coming back? Because I suspect you didn't ever see racing in Austria.
If I have seen it, I don't remember.
I don't know when it fell off the calendar. I think you probably have never seen a race there.
Well, in that case, it's brand new to me.
Mm.
So yeah, that is exciting. It's actually interesting to have a new race to me that is at an existing track, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Because all the ones we've been to have been
built. Yes, brand new purpose-built circuits. So it will be fresh for you, even if it's a blast from the past for
a lot of people seem to be positive about that one, that they like the racing there. So that's a good sign as well.
I like the racing there.
But it is Red Bull owned, isn't it? So got to watch out for that.
They probably have it laser mapped and, you know, they have simulations of everything. They've probably put special potholes in that only they know about. There will be drain covers lifting up, you know, on cue, I'm sure.
It's a bit weird to be the sponsor of a track because if they win, it's like a fix. And if they don't win, that's really embarrassing.
That's true.
They can't win. It's a lose-lose situation there, really.
We shall see how that goes. Yeah, they do a lot of running. They've done some demos there. So they know they have data from F1 cars. I think they can have a material advantage over every other competitor. So that'll be interesting to see those controversies unfold.
Yeah. The last race of the year is at Abu Dhabi. And I think there might be something about that last race.
No!
That
surely
is a
not.
Bit special or different.
I heard that Abu Dhabi was twice the race of all the others on the calendar.
It's definitely twice the race it used to be.
Mm, that's what it is. Mm. Some controversy. I really can't see what the fuss is about.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's double points in Abu Dhabi, but if we talk about it and say, don't understand, don't get what the fuss is about, then everyone tells us what the fuss is about again.
I heard all the opinions. There is a 200 comment plus thread on Side Podcast if you care to go and dig it out. I think it was on the latest Aside with Joe podcast thread, and you can go and join that discussion should you be so inclined. But suffice to say, I don't really mind if it's double points for Abu Dhabi, but I don't mind if it isn't.
No, either way, whatever. As long as everyone knows in advance, that's all I really care about, you know?
It would be criminal if it was double points until the day before the start of the season or even after the start of the season. If they're going to make the change back and reverse the decision, it should happen, hopefully, in January.
People were more positive about the permanent driver numbers. I mean, I'm actually not too bothered about that either, although it does make sense from personalising the driver point of view, which is something we have tried to encourage.
Yeah, no, I'm excited by driver numbers. I'm very keen to see what they pick. I'm keen to see which drivers make the most of it, because they've all got an equal opportunity, effectively. They each get their own number, and they can, as far as I can tell, market it and make use of it how they choose to, and therefore the drivers, the most inventive drivers and creative drivers, will presumably do more with it. I expect someone like Lewis Hamilton to you know, with his marketing.
Yeah, well, Bottas was doing really well with that. He wanted 77 to replace the two T's in his name for the hashtag Bottas, but with sevens. I wonder if Webber is gutted that he's missed out on a number.
Do you think he'd like a number?
I don't know. Just, you know, just as I leave, they bring in the numbers.
Now anyone can have the number he wanted. That's true. Tough.
Yeah. There has been some weirdness around how it's being implemented, because the actual regulations say it's going to be by a ballot, which is like a lottery, isn't it?
Correct.
That's what a ballot is, my understanding of it. But the FIA spokesperson said it was going to be in championship order, first come, first served, pick your number, maybe you have and end up having your second choice, or whatever. So the FIA can't agree with themselves.
They disagree on how their own number allocation process will work. I guess it doesn't make any difference to us. I like the idea that the drivers get a set number of choices, and it should work in championship order, I think. You know, if you win the title, then you should get to have the number one. I suppose that someone like Jenson Button's a bit annoyed because he had a bad car this year, but he had a good car last year, so he's lost out slightly.
But there's a lot of numbers, isn't there? There's 98 that they get to choose from.
Yep.
And there's only 22 of them, so there's quite a lot. They should be able to find something they're comfortable with. What number would you choose?
If I could have any number,
yeah,
not one that's already been chosen and selected by a driver, I would have 13. I'd definitely have 13.
Because you're awkward.
Because I don't see any reason why there isn't a number 13 in Formula 1 at the moment. I think it's ridiculous.
I would have number 99 because that's off of ice creams.
And because you're flaky.
When the more controversial things were proposed by the FIA or introduced, they weren't even a proposal, were they? The driver numbers and the double points. There were also some other bits and pieces that were less definite, like cost caps, in which they said, we will introduce a global cost cap in 2015, but we don't really know how we're going to do it, and we're going to set up a working group to see what they think.
This is bringing back nightmares for me, visions and recollections from side podcasts of a bygone era, maybe 2008, 2009, where we spent a considerable amount of time and energy debating the merits of cost caps and also the potential implementations. And I think back then, the conclusion we came to was that it was entirely unpoliceable. The desire for a cost cap is notable and, you know, desirable, and I can understand why somebody might say that, you know, spending £150 million per year on a racing car is unsustainable and it has to stop. That I'm down with that, absolutely.
Well, we've just spent the first however long of this podcast saying they've chosen this driver because of money, and they've chosen this one because of money, and they can't do this because they haven't got enough money. And that just isn't the right place to be.
No.
I mean, it's difficult times, and Formula One is possibly the epitome of a luxury, but these people need to be able to race if that's what they're going to do. And so a cost cap, the concept of it is perfect, but implementing it and policing it, that's where I think in probably 2007 or 8, we decided wasn't possible. And I'm not sure that anything has changed that would make it possible.
Coincidentally, that is the very area that the FIA were loose and woolly and non-specific about. The one thing that actually no one has been able to tie down, and I'm sure that remains the same. The thing is, as fans, nobody desires to tune into the pinnacle of motorsport as a competition between the drivers with the most money. What you want to see is the best drivers driving the best machinery to find out who is the best in the world, not who is the best mediocre driver with, you know, the most, who is the most marketable person.
Yeah.
That's not particularly entertaining. It's not something I would want to tune in to watch. So Formula One has to be, you know, it has a lot of things to keep in the air and to keep in mind and to, you know, to be aware of when it debates these things. And clearly the FIA have looked at the situation and said, no one has any money. And there are maybe, like, Red Bull have a sensible, sizable budget. And Ferrari have something similar, maybe not quite as much. But they have, both those two teams have money. Mercedes, perhaps not a bottomless pit, but enough to, you know,
enough to employ a million managers.
And more managers than they could ever possibly have a use for. And everybody else's manager too. So, you know, those three teams are absolutely fine. McLaren, I suspect, also, they'll be okay. Beyond those teams, I would suggest every other manufacturer and every other outfit in down the grid from those four down are struggling. And not just like, we could do with a bit more money and we could do better if we had more cash, but actually we may not even be in Formula One in 12 months' time.
I think when it hit Lotus, I really thought, okay, this is a significant problem, because the pay driver argument thing has always been, well, there's been pay drivers in Formula One forever. This is just how it works. But it's creeping further and further up the grid. Mm. And now it's hit Lotus and they were fourth in the championship. That's just not good. That's next not to, how it should be.
Next to Red Bull, Lotus had the fastest car, I think. I mean, you know, lap for lap. In a straight fight, that was the car you wanted to be in. And they had the, you know, they did that with one of the smallest budgets and whilst decimating their talent pool as other teams scooped in and picked up people they couldn't afford to keep. So that's, you know, they did an incredible job. They really did. The people at Enstone deserve a pat on the back, as do the people at, you know, I mean, everybody at Sauber. It's incredible that they, you know, they can even afford to go racing. I know they were struggling before they got their Russian backing. They couldn't afford to even pay Hulk. And you've got, you know, all these teams really are struggling financially, so much so that, you know, we could lose one or more teams in very short order. And I think the FIA are acutely aware of that because they put out a tender for another team to see if anybody wants to come into Formula One. Is anybody crazy enough to, you know,
but they've
to
done
join
it
this?
Again on the pretense that there's going to be a cost cap. This is what they did last time. It's okay,
yep.
We'll control costs, come into the sport, we'll sort it out.
True.
And they didn't. And now they've done it again. Yeah, we'll have a cost cap. It'll be fine. We're not quite sure how it's going to work. But hey, why not join in anyway?
It's interesting that the last time that the idea of a cost cap was floated, I think teams like Ferrari threw their hands up in the air and said, that's it. We cannot possibly take part in Formula One with a cost cap. We're going to start our own rival series.
Breakaway.
That was a breakaway thing. It was a huge controversy. There was Toyota and BMW and every, you know, the big manufacturers threatening to go their own way. And this time, this year, the cost cap has been raised. Absolute silence. Teams effectively are saying, the smaller teams are saying, that sounds like a reasonable idea.
Yeah.
But the big teams, the teams who are most likely to start a breakaway series, nothing.
Well, yeah, they've got no one to go with them. That's the thing. It would be a breakaway series of three.
Yes, it would. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But there is, for that reason, there might, you know, you might have, there's a slight, the higher chance that it might happen this time, even if, you know, assuming they can find a way to restrict the costs, to control the costs, to legally check on spending, you know, because you basically want permission, the FIA want permission, I assume, to go into Ferrari and look at their accounts. And that's really, really, really big ask.
It's a big
for
ask.
Somebody like Ferrari.
But as this economic thing grows and all with the banks and politics and stuff, people are being more transparent about their accounts, aren't they? So,
well, you've certainly got, I mean, there was a suggestion that the reason that Lotus didn't get their money they expected from Quantum was because of accountancy, transparency things, money laundering issues, you know, to do with the transfer of larger sums of money between corporations. Things that in the past would have been very easy to do, which are now very, well, which are now much more tricky to
they're restricted, aren't they?
To happen.
You have to be careful.
So because of all that, you're right. Yeah, maybe transparent accounts are feasible in this day and age. Maybe 5 years on from the last time this came up, it could actually happen. We'll have to wait and see.
And the other thing that the FIA have said they will do, but they're not quite sure how, is a 5-second penalty. No specific information about how that would work, but it's just another option for the stewards. Which seems like a good thing because the drive-through and the 10-second stop-go are quite harsh penalties if you've only done something small, like accidentally running over a curb at the wrong time.
Mm. I think this is my favourite suggestion of all the suggestions. I like the driver number idea, but this one actually is something that Formula One has needed, because this, I believe that you can actually you can accumulate them. So you could say that if you wanted a 10-second penalty, you just have 2 5-second penalties. Yeah. So
it just depends how they're going to do it. I mean, it's hard to say.
Mm.
It seems like a good idea, but the specifics are not there.
No, but the Formula One has needed this. You want minor transgressions to be dealt with minor penalties. And this 5-second suggestion will do exactly that.
And whilst there was all the angst about the double points, it was mostly overlooked that there was no mention of mandatory pit stops. So presumably that idea has gone out the way.
Teams didn't like it.
I wonder which idea the fans hate more. Like, if the double points went away but the mandatory pit stops came back in, how would they feel then?
That's, yeah. Okay. So what, if the FIA say, yeah, okay, we won't give double points to Abu Dhabi, but we will bring in mandatory pit stops?
I'd rather have...
There would be uproar!
I'd rather have double points than mandatory pit stops, I think, personally.
Yeah. If that's the trade-off. Let's hope... Yeah. Oh, God. Don't give the FIA ideas. I couldn't cope with the comments.
But all the ideas were voted on, or the strategy group had their say. Now, this strategy group is a new thing that I didn't even know existed until this whole thing blew up. And it's some of the teams, not all of them. And then the FIA get a say and FOM get a say. So there's like 3 sides to the story.
At least, yes. I'm not even sure the strategy group existed the last time we recorded a show.
That's why I wasn't aware of it then.
You'd have to look into the exact details of how it was set up, why it was set up.
It doesn't seem like a very good idea, because only a few of the teams are represented. I think, is it 6? And then they're always going to be outnumbered because they've got the FIA and FOM ganging up against them. So it's always going to be 2 against 1. But the fact that not all the teams are there is actually a bit of an issue. And thank God for Bob from Force India. He thinks it's illegal.
Formula One has gone. Formula One teams have gone from having a unanimous voting system whereby everybody had an equal say, and teams who didn't like an idea could effectively veto the entire thing just by abstaining. And it might have changed slightly in recent years so that it was a majority system, but it's still, you'd only have to get, you know, you have, if you own Red Bull and you happen to own Toro Rosso and you happen to supply, you know, a driver to another team, you could get 3 teams on board and then you could veto it. And that has happened. The problem with that system, and the thing that I hated the most about it, is that nothing ever got done.
Yeah.
Because no teams ever agreed on everything. And it was slow and it was laborious. And there was always some sticking point and things. I think it cost, there was a discussion that maybe there was a cost cap agreement signed, sealed and delivered in the past. But it was thrown out by one of these teams who just you know, they changed their mind at the last minute. And that's the problem. The old system was broken, in my mind. Now, perhaps the new system is better. Perhaps it's not better. But what you can say about what we've seen from it so far is they sure as hell know how to make changes happen fast.
I guess that's true. Yeah. There was a lot of talk recently from Ferrari. Luca de Montezemolo said they had the chance to vote against double points and they didn't at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But now he thinks maybe they should have done.
So Ferrari were in the strategy meeting. They've got a vote.
Yeah.
And they've got a veto.
They have a veto over everyone, don't they?
For certain things.
Yeah.
So they chose not only to vote for double points, but they chose not to veto it either. And then they came out of the strategy meeting.
And the world exploded.
Twitter exploded, yeah. Certainly. Formula One fans went mental. And then Luca went,
yeah, that wasn't a good idea. Maybe we should have spoken up.
There is, without question, the hint that maybe these people are out of touch and that they are making decisions on the hoof without giving it too much thought and are misinterpreting what fans expect. Some fans, not us, but enough fans to create petitions and cause all sorts of chaos.
The double points thing, we might not get it, but it's obviously really, really upset a lot of people. So if that is true, that's an issue. It's something they need to think about.
I'm with Luca's original interpretation, which was, that seems like a reasonable thing, let's try it.
Yeah.
Bernie came out, actually, a couple of days ago and said that he'd prefer double points for the final 3 races. Uh-huh. Now, it's hard to tell whether
Bernie also walks round and round revolving doors.
Yeah, He does struggle to get into some buildings. Mm. That is true. And there is obviously with Bernie, you never know whether he's just trying to stir the pot in order to create some headlines and keep Formula One in the news. On the other hand, final three races make, you know, it removes the argument that one race is better than all the others, because then three races are better than all the others. I don't know. Maybe they're out of touch. Maybe they are in a position of making decisions that are not good for the sport. But at least they're making some decisions. That's all I want. Just move the damn sport forward.
That is something.
Unanimous agreements from 11 teams. It's never, ever, ever going to happen. It's never good for the sport. And the teams have no doubt lost a lot of power in this change. And I'd say, you know, I think so far, so good. Nothing that they've done thus far has upset me. Maybe in the future they'll do some really stupid things. But every bad decision can be reversed. Rulemakers and regulators and the FIA and Formula One management and teams. And it's everybody's job to ensure that Formula One is enjoyable. It's everybody's job to ensure that Formula One is watchable. And that people don't tune out and watch something else instead. And that's what you've got to look out for. And that's what I hope the F1 strategy group will aim to resolve.
So overall, I think it's fair to say we're excited about 2014. I mean,
it
can only be better than the season just gone.
I could not disagree with that statement. I mean, you never know. Formula One has turned around and delivered two pretty dire seasons on the bounce, but you know,
it's all changed though, isn't it?
It's whatever happens next year will be different. I think we can say that much for certain. And you know, 2013, it wasn't that bad. I really, really enjoyed the first 6 months. I think until the very second that Lewis Hamilton's tire exploded in Silverstone, I enjoyed the 2013 season, because as Lewis Hamilton slowed in Great Britain, it became immediately clear that Pirelli would have to change the tyres, and then what would happen, you know, and there was no question that the events that unfolded would then unfold. But I recall at the beginning of the year, you looked at me completely baffled when I said, I really, really want to watch this qualifying session because I really like this season. And that was maybe the third or the fourth race. I forget when it was, but I was very much enjoying the opening races. It was a season of two halves, and the first half was absolutely brilliant, and the second half was unbelievably terrible. And that was my season.
Yes. So the new one, definitely going to be better. In my show notes, it says, talk about our plans for the new season. Actually, I don't think we've got any specific plans. Hopefully we'll do more shows, because that's always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just going to be the same stuff with Fact by Factboxing and commenting and brilliant features and all more of the same. I've still got exams to do, so I'm going to be busy doing that. But otherwise, I mean, I wrote a book whilst I did these exams.
I'm impressed, by the way, that you managed to deliver a book before Christmas, because your 2013 season review, the season finished, what was it, the end of November, and we are now the third week of December. So within 3 weeks, you have written and published and released an entire 50,000 something word, 60,000 word season review. And it's fantastic. I'm genuinely impressed by the amount of the dedication that you've shown to Formula One, especially given how bad the damn year was.
I was just going
to
say,
I wouldn't want to relive the 2013 season the way
trouble,
you have.
The trouble with this part of the show is I'm going to say, I've got a brand new book, go out and buy it, except for the fact that 2013 was rubbish. But really, I wrote it because this is one of the first years where I've really watched every race, focused on everything. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what happened, and I wanted to compile that and use that information well. So this year was good. I want to do the same again next year.
You want Formula One to be worth writing about, I think, next year.
Yeah. So I do encourage you to buy my book, but I would totally understand if you just wanted to forget 2013 ever existed.
Well, right now, I will tell you that actually I'm quite glad to see the back of 2013.
Yeah.
But with all season reviews, they become more useful over time, because obviously we were discussing whether or not you recall ever seeing the Austrian Grand Prix. And imagine if you had a 2003 season review, you could just call up at the touch of a button, could search.
I'd know.
And you'd know instantly whether or not you watched the Austrian Grand Prix. So the season review, I think, is actually it's still a fantastic idea. And I think everybody should go out and buy it, because even if right now you think, I just really don't want to remember those 9 straight wins, one day it will be useful. One day you'll want that at to hand. You want that information searchable and on any device you happen to carry around, which is exactly what you can do with Kindle Books.
So the book is part of the Pocket F1 Handbook series, and it's called Grand Prix Almanac 2013. It's available on Amazon for all Kindle devices and apps and things. It will be on the iBookstore, except that they're on holiday for Christmas at the moment, because apparently people take time off.
Apple don't work anywhere near as hard as you do.
Wow. And yeah, buy it if you want.
Would it make your Christmas if people went out and bought the book?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So let me, so say somebody went out and thought, well, I'd like to get Christine Blashford a Christmas present. She's really hard to buy for.
I am. It's true.
It's impossible to buy for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's been doing Side Podcast for, what, 7 years now? And, you know, I'd like to show her some appreciation. Maybe I'll send her a card. Or I could buy her book. You'd appreciate that.
I would.
That would make your Christmas. And also, not only would you make Christine's Christmas by buying her book, you'd also get an ebook out of it, which is quite a handy resource. Win-win, really. You cannot lose. That's a great deal. I've just decided I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy an ebook for me to make your Christmas, and I think everybody else should do the same.
2013, the season, is all done and dusted. 2013, the year, is nearly over. So I think all that is left to say is Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. You know, the new year and festive period is when we came up with Side Podcast. So this is 7 years we've been doing this. And I just wanted to say thank you to everyone for the support.
It was Christmas. Mm. It was this week.
7 whole years.
That's amazing.
You're all brilliant.